Okay, just a little bit more about types.
Yeah.
Here in Boulder, Denver, you go to a party and everybody's talking about their Enneagram type. So what you're saying here about types is that whatever Enneagram type you are, that's not really that meaningful until you understand what level or stage that person's at. And then it unpacks a certain level of meaning. But you could have 50 people in a room who, let's say, are all Enneagram type 5, and they could be really, really different in the expression because they could all be at different stages of development.
Yeah. And I think that sort of intuitively makes sense, and the research certainly backs it up. Let me qualify it. The Enneagram, there are many different versions of it, and some of its original versions actually had there were 9 types in the Enneagram, and they're often just numbered, but sometimes they're given names or labels. But they're broken down into, there are 3 classes of 3. And some of the early versions, these 3 classes were related more to the chakras. So 3 of them represented the head or upper chakras, 3 of them represented the heart or central region, and 3 of them represented the lower chakras. Now, if you read it that way, then you're reading it as levels, and that's okay. But that doesn't hold up quite as well as the version of the Enneagram that, let's say, Helen Palmer has developed, I think probably as good as anybody. And that's it. It really is, whatever else it might be, it's especially good at being a typology, where these 9 different types, their personality types, can exist at each of these 7 levels of development that were talked about. When I said the research supports it, the research is you can take any of these people at Enneagram types, and they still go through these stages of development. We know that because there are no exceptions to those stages of development. So a lot recently, there have been several books that have come out, and I don't want to name names because I don't want to leave some people out, but have basically used that model and said, okay, this works. We're going to use the Enneagram types at these different levels of development. And what that means, for example, is that you can have somebody who's, let me give a stark example to show what would be involved. Let's use level 2 and level 3 on our simple 7-level scale. Level 2 is egocentric. Level 3 is conformist. And let's use Enneagram type 5. Enneagram type 5 is a classical sort of autonomous, subdued, can be scholarly, tends to be very kind of witnessing. Gotama Buddha was a 5. I have a lot of 5 tendencies in certain ways. And it's, again, strengths and weaknesses. So you can have somebody where, and they're both Enneagram type 5, but a type 5 at level 2 and a type 5 at level 3 show much more differences than a type 5 at level 2 and a type 4 at level 2 or a type 3 at level 2. And the difference between a level 2 type 5 is an egocentric dolt, and a level 3 type 5 is a conformist, conventional, somebody that's fitting in very, very specifically with a law and order orientation. Those people are very, very different, even though they're both 5s. It means within their level of development, they're going to have these 5-ish characteristics. But the differences between the levels are so great that, you know, that really has to be factored in as well. So you can be a type 5 at level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5, level 6, and level 7. And like I say, a lot of more sophisticated Enneagram researchers, that's what they're doing now, is they're using it that way. So Enneagrams are fine, but the real action is, where's your center of gravity, and is it increasing its expansion into greater spheres of consciousness and compassion? And that's a developmental evolutionary unfolding, if it's going to be permanent.